Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show, your guide, of course, to better cricket, whether you coach it or whether you play it. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are, we're here to help you out for about half an hour or so. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And joining me on the line to help you out are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris. How's it going?
All good here. Thank you very much.
Excellent news, and things progressing through the winter as you would have hoped so far?
Yeah, pretty much. We've got our new coach starting with us in a couple of weeks, which I'm looking forward to receiving.
Matt
Thompson into that new role. So that's very exciting. Really good coach, somebody who's I've worked with plenty of times before. That'll be good. And then, all progressing up towards the India tour, the Mumbai tour that we embark on the 10th of December.
Yeah, Matt is a friend of Pitch Vision as well. He's appeared on the site a couple of times for various reasons. And good coach and great guy as well. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there.
I know you've been doing some rugby stuff. Have you seen today this try that this chap scored in an amateur game? I know it's not specifically.
Is this the back heel over the head?
Yeah, back heeled over his head and then ran the entire length of the pitch.
I know, it's amazing. Our kids do that every week and no one talks about it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I taught him that. I'm sure I taught him that.
I think I read somewhere, because I've seen it in a couple of different places, I read somewhere that he'd tried it almost every game for like 10 years or something like that. He'd been trying it, and obviously everyone sees it online and think, oh, that's brilliant, he's a genius. Actually, no, he's
just
not.
Every
if,
time.
Just tried,
yeah.
If you keep going, you'll get it in the end.
Hey, well, you know, it's you know what the kids say, isn't it? It's picks or it didn't happen. So, you know, he's got the proof. That's all you need these days. Let's get back to cricket, though. I wanted to talk about, I used this little bit at the start of the show as basically my way to pick you two brains about something that I'm thinking about. It's kind of like my
question. We haven't noticed.
It's kind of like my question of the week. So, whenever I'm thinking about something, I always think, oh, that'd be good. I'll ask Lavers and Garras, and then I'll adjust as necessary. So it works well. But this week, it's something which I've been thinking about as we move into the new year is systems, and specifically trying to find ways to develop players and improve players and bring not only bring players on, but also bring new players into the game and how much you need to have a system to do that. And if you do need a system, how important is it to, or how much detail do you need within that system? Now, obviously, it's going to vary depending on what area you're working in. And some people are reluctant to look at anything more than a very basic system of, you know, we'll just get to work. And then, you know, got other people who plan in great detail. So where are you on the idea of having a system of bringing people into the game, getting them excited about the game, and then developing them into whatever level you want to get them to?
Well, it's a pretty topical one. I've literally come out of a meeting about 5 minutes ago with one of our coaches who works in our fourth 11 here at school. So the fourth 11 historically is for the kids who have got less experience or have had less exposure to cricket over the years. They're in, you know, their GCSE year, they might be in their A-level years, and it's really about harvesting that enthusiasm and supporting that enthusiasm and giving them a first exposure into the game, which is a positive one. So we've had exactly the same conversation that you sort of asked us about here. What I wanted to do was to get his experience, because Jeff has been working within that level of cricket for about 17 years now. So rather than me try and tell him what I think from my ivory tower, I got him to give me his views. And what he thinks is really important is, A, to have some fun. And often when we overstructure things, the fun element can go out of it a little bit. So, he talks about lots of activity. He talks about having lots of different things to do for not too long a time, so you get to sample different skills within the game very quickly to try and harness and harvest some of that enthusiasm for it before you then specialise. So almost having very open sessions where you give somebody a little bit of information, let them go and let them experience stuff for the first time. Then he talked about the importance of developing a leader, because the best teams that he's had and the best little projects he's had, which is only a 9-week season, he's had one or two people that have acted internally as the captain or the go-to person that have driven the enthusiasm levels from within, as well as the coach doing that. It's actually the players themselves. So he talked to me about some of the characteristics that he looks for in leaders, you know, people that want to make things happen, don't necessarily need to be cricketers, but just want to make things happen, want to have fun, have got some ideas, and obviously we can then start building, as well as the system around people, you can also build the leadership that would drive and design their own sort of process to build enthusiasm. So those are his two main thrusts. And then the other thing, I think, is to make sure that anybody who sits on top of any system, i.e. a director, so for myself and Sam, you know, and yourself being a director of what goes on beneath, is having a bit of understanding, a bit of empathy, and possibly lending an ear to the people that are getting these kids and these players into the game for the first time. So there are his three biggest things, and while systems are important, I think the human element to all of that is absolutely massive, because enthusiasm doesn't necessarily come through a session plan, and enthusiasm comes through the activities that people do, the language that you use, the way that you present new skills into a first time to people that are sampling the game, or people that are unsure whether they're going to turn up again next week.
Most coaches are people who want to get stuck into doing, actually coaching cricket, doing something, getting out there, doing stuff, helping people out. But also, there does need to be some element of structure and planning in there as well. So where do you draw the line on those things, Lavis? You obviously don't want to be doing paperwork all the time, but also, you know, there needs to be something there. So where's the line for you?
I don't want him doing paperwork any of the time if I can help.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I think the line's going to be in a different place for every group, with every individual, probably every week, every time of the year. It's just having an awareness that there is a strength to the structure, there is a requirement for it, there a system or being part of a process is a really valuable thing. However, as I think Gareth used the word, there's that human element in there. You've got to be aware of that. So you've got to have space for the session to adapt, for the session to change, for a program to adapt. And that's where there's got to be an element of flexibility in. So yes, you can plan and structure. And often something I've probably fallen foul of in years gone by would be you'd plan everything. You'd plan everything down to the last minute, and then as soon as one thing goes wrong, you find that the whole thing you've put into place goes out of sync. So you've got to have some plans in place and some structure, which is going to give you a bit of direction and give the group a bit of direction. But you've got to have an element of flexibility there. Now, depending on the group, that element of flexibility and that element of ownership that you can pass on to the group to take control of what they're doing is going to change. And you might have a group where actually you can almost live in a very idealistic world where you can say, right, this, we've got everything here, crack on with what you want to do and you'll get it done. And that's a really idealistic way for training to happen, and almost never does happen that way successfully. But sometimes it will do, and depending on the group and the position they're in terms of how they're developing, and the other way, as we said, making sure that everything is planned for them, again, has its drawbacks as well. So like, it's get to know your group, get to know the people you're with, get to know the aspirations they've got and how hard they're willing to work for what they want to achieve. And if you have an understanding of that, and you know them, and you understand what they're willing to sacrifice to get to where they want to be, then you'll probably have a better idea of where that line is drawn and how much they need to be led and structured, and how much open decision making there can be in terms of what they're going to do.
So what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the amount of structure that you need to build in is the minimum amount that you want to be able to get towards whatever your ultimate aim is, whether that ultimate aim is to increase participation of guys who are, you know, just getting into the game and you want to create that enthusiasm and that fire, or whether it's guys who have got that fire and they're working hard and they want to push on to the next level. It's all about creating enough of a structure that you can do that and then it doesn't get in the way.
I think that's spot on, mate. And I put more formalised plans around those that are already hooked on the game than I do about the ones that I'm trying to get hooked on the game. I have a timetable for how I try to go about sessions that are aiming to get an interest in the game. And that timetable is that they go between X amount of different activities, so they get the sample as much as they possibly can. But there's nothing more than, you know, you might have 5 minutes over there doing some diving on a tarpaulin with some fairy liquid on it. So you get, you know, that sensation, because that's great fun. You know, you might have some diving catches on the beach. You might have some high catches with a tennis ball, just to get the sample of what that might feel like. You know, you might introduce the notion of pressure where everybody is cheering as the ball goes up in the air. You know, all of those things are great fun, but I wouldn't spend a huge amount of time going into the end detail around that, because I just want to hook people in. I want to get people into the sport. Then when they're in the sport and at the right time, then we can start to really break stuff down. So I'm sure it's the same with you guys, with your players that are really keen to develop. Then we put a more formalised structure around them to try and get to the nuances that are going to make the real difference. It may be the, you know, the 1 or 2%, that's where we have to put the detail in. But initially, if it's a case of, does this person turn up next week or does he not turn up next week, then I want to have a timetable of activity, get that enthusiasm going, make them come back through the gate, because that's got to be any good coach that works with young kids or people new to a sport will say that the definition of success and failure is whether they walk back through the gate next week.
And I just want to wrap up this session with a little bit of news from Pitch Vision, the Pitch Vision software that runs on all our Pitch Vision systems, PB1 and upwards, is getting an upgrade, and that's available right now. We've made it a lot easier for the video tools to be used. You can zoom in now using the camera that's provided with PV1 if you want to get a closer look in on any particular aspect. You can very easily configure up to 4 cameras all over the place, and they're easy to set up and adjust as you go along without interrupting your session. And you've also got a whole new load of drawing tools that allow you to highlight any particular technical points that you want. So it's never been easier or simpler to use Pitch Vision to get to the video analysis tools that you want and then get helping players improve. So check it out. At this point in the show, we grab a couple of messages from the ether. We answer the questions that have been sent into the show. So how that works is the 2 questions that we choose to be sent in are answered, and then we choose a winner. And the winner of the question of the week wins a prize that is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and there are other ways to get in touch with us, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. The first person who sent in their question this week is Adam. And Adam, slightly passive-aggressive, I think, with this question, but an interesting one nonetheless. Adam says, how do we stop our openers from blocking it? Bit of frustration there.
I love it, from blocking it. It's fantastic. Absolutely awesome. I can only speculate that he bats through 3, 4, or 5, yeah. I reckon. Or maybe bowler. He's one of the opening bowlers and never has enough runs to defend. I suppose really trying to stop them blocking it is having a discussion with them about what their intention is around blocking it. And to me, there's differences, isn't there? You know, you've got people that, I suppose, the perception of the Jeff Boycott was that he would just go out there and block the ball for pure survival, which may or may not be true, but that was the perception that came off of the way that he batted it. there's also people that when they block it, if you talk to them about it, they're blocking it to send a message back to the bowler. So that would be more of a Graham Gooch type approach behind every one of the blocks, was to be able to play as positive a block as possible to put the bowler off from keeping hitting what effectively is the best length that you can do as a bowler. And equally, you get the other people who are people who block the ball with the intention to try and score a single. So you've got the sort of mixed match of all of those three, and occasionally, and probably quite often, you'll find that it's a combination of all of those three at certain stages of people's innings. So the first discussion I would have is, if there is a frustration, which it sounds like there is, would be, you know, what is your intention behind a block? And if they do come back with, well, it's to make sure that I'm in for the next ball, then you can go, well, that's fantastic. But are there any other positive or more run scoring ways that we can utilise a block? Because if the scoreboard keeps ticking over with a block, every third block goes for a single, then I'm sure that the frustration for the people sitting below the order maybe changes. So can we put on the back of it some awareness of where runs can be scored? Can we put on the back of it some awareness of how to run between the wickets, what type of communication we can have wherever gaps are in the field? Because all of a sudden, it's a different type of conversation. But if the sole purpose is just to stay in, whilst that's valuable at certain stages, it's likely to frustrate people that are watching from the sidelines on other occasions. So, you know, what is the intention of your block?
Yeah, and I guess we're interpreting a bit here, because, you know, it's a deliberately aggressive question, isn't it, Laver? So we're interpreting it in a way that's, you know, trying to be serious over what may be just a flippant comment. But when it comes down to it, you know, there's a lot of balls that happen in even in shorter format cricket matches that are not scored off, right? So if you just look at the number of dots somebody's faced and gone, well, he must have blocked every one of those, that's not telling the whole story, is it?
Yeah, I think as much as people don't like to look at the statistics behind what actually happens in a game, if you get up some pretty simple stats and imagine someone's faced 50 balls, which would be a pretty realistic innings for an opener, and it may be that, it by the sound of it, they're not scoring at the rate that others in the group may want them to. But if someone has a good innings, you'll probably see that there are still a high percentage of dots in there. So I guess it's looking at it as an opportunity. And from someone's perspective who's frustrated, it's how can you stop the openers from blocking it, but how can you ask them that question without asking it in that way, really? So how can you make them not want to block it is what we're looking for. How can you make them score a little bit quicker rather than just sort of telling them what they probably know they're doing? But yeah, in terms of just looking at some figures from a game, if you face 50 balls, you might hit, I don't know, you might hit three or four boundaries, you might hit three or four twos, you might hit a dozen ones, and you still find that you've got more than 50% of your balls left are dot balls. So the opportunity is there, and maybe it's something that needs to go towards the coach or with the batsman towards the coach, and it's an area to be considered in terms of that development. Gareth's talked about different ways that a ball can be blocked. How often does that become part of a training session? Is it something that that maybe should take a more of a focal point in the training session, whether it's for the openers or possibly for everyone? So it sounds like opportunity, and I think when there is a part of your game as a team or an individual's game that isn't going well, always easy to look at it from a negative perspective and be tough on them and tell them they're doing something wrong and it's all doom and gloom. But really, it's an opportunity. If someone points out something you're not strong at, it's an opportunity to make it a little bit better, which is going to improve you as a cricketer, and it's going to improve the team as a group. So try and take it to the coach and take it to the player or take it to the rest of the group with a positive spin as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, I guess step zero is to find out if the batsmen agree with your analysis. The batsmen who you think are blocking, do they agree with the analysis that they are? Do they agree with the analysis that they're scoring too slowly, or do they come back to you and say, "Well, actually, you know, we feel like we're setting a platform here. You know, we're more concerned with blocking because we don't want to be four wickets down in the first 10 overs. You know, if that's the kind of reply that you're getting, then it's a different story to going, yeah, actually, we are blocking. I just don't really know how what else to do.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that's it's a different conversation then, isn't it? So
and you may find it something that tidies itself up very quickly when they say, yes, I'm doing it for this reason. And suddenly the reason that you're doing it doesn't tally up with what actually the people you think you're helping want. So it might be that there's just some cross lines there in terms of communication. Or it might be that you say, well, I didn't realise I was blocking it and I thought I was going quite quickly. Or inevitably, you know, you never know. It might be like when I was batting where it probably looked like I was blocking, but I was trying to hit every ball for four. But I just kept missing the bloody thing. So, that could be the case. It might be that the bowlers use that terminology, or this individual has used that terminology of blocking it, but it might be that they're not scoring quickly enough, and it could be a simple case of they're not getting bat and ball off enough, and maybe they're being too aggressive along the way. It's probably not that specifically in this case, but yeah, there's more than one way to interpret a situation. There's more than one thing that could be going on.
Yeah, coming at it from the idea of, which we've talked about before, coming at it from the idea of how can I help rather than why are you doing that wrong? You're getting to the same point, but you're doing it in such a different way. You're going to be more likely to, if not get what you want, to understand where the other person's coming from. But yeah, I mean, in terms of practical things, I think we cover that with what you were saying, Gareth, you know, that intention to look to score and ways to rotate the strike and pick up runs even when you're not looking to hit the ball for a one bounce four over extra cover.
Yeah, I think there's some brilliant examples, aren't there, in all the different formats of cricket, which you can draw upon as well in this modern day around the intention of blocking, even in the longer format of a game. The way that certain people turn the strike over is really impressive, you know, and I think one of the things that was impressive about the two openers of England in that first test match in India was the fact that they were able to turn the strike over in that second innings, and it wasn't just the big shots that they played, because you know neither of them would be known as sort of like the biggest stroke makers in the world, but the fact is that they set that platform for a declaration so well by a combination of hitting bad balls for four, having good footwork, but also rotating the strike and keeping that scoreboard ticking over with their defensive shots.
Yeah, so important, so important. And it makes such a huge difference. You know, when we did some analysis on this very idea of, you know, how many balls players score off and how they rotate the strike and all that on our club from last year, one of the areas that we found is the more, I mean, this sounds like such an obvious thing to say, but the more balls we scored from, the more runs we got. So if you are looking to try and pick up those singles, even if you're adding 1 or 2% to the number of balls that you score from, you're adding a significantly larger number of runs onto the end. So it does make a difference. A little thing going back to 1%, doesn't it? You know, 1 or 2% increase makes a much larger result than just that little 1 or 2% increase on the stat of scoring ball percentage. Next question is from Samarth. Samarth has a question which is very similar to how long is a piece of string, which is how much time does it take to be a good bowler?
I suppose define good would be my starting point, really, and because maybe my definition of what a good bowler is different to yours, David, or yours, Sam, and I'm sure there would be some difference in that, not just from, you know, the levels of cricket that we've been lucky or unlucky enough to work with him, but just because our individual perception of what is good might be different. I've played with club cricketers whose understanding of what they perceive as a good length is, you know, is more precise than mine. Even though part of my job when I was working with England was to measure people's length percentages and get them to be really precise. You know, somebody like a Malcolm Sketchley years ago at Ventnor would be even more precise than maybe even an Andrew Flintoff. What is good would be the first point. And once you've come to that conclusion, I think you start to answer your own question from your own experience, really. If Goody is getting the ball down the other end relatively straight so you can service a net practice and then maybe develop on into being a bowler in a game, then obviously, you know, the journey is probably going to be a lesser one than somebody who's looking to be able to hit length on a regular basis, swinging the ball in and out. So, yeah, what are your parameters would be the starting point? And until you clearly define those, it's a really difficult question to answer. If I was to put it by my reckoning, a good bowler is somebody who can hit length on a regular basis, but also have the capacity to be able to hit a Yorker and bowl a good bumper as a fast bowler. So you've got three lengths, really, that you're looking to try and master. I reckon that to do that at a pace which is competitive at the top level of club cricket, going into professional cricket, anything from sort of 77 miles upwards, an hour upwards, I would say that takes a heck of a long time to be able to get to that point. And even if you start your journey at you know, along that route around 13, 14, there are very few bowlers in club cricket particularly who will be able to operate at those levels and have good control over those lengths until they're 23, 24, because it does take time to develop this, not just from a technical point of view, but also your mental capacity to be able to fight all of those words and noises that go on in your head when you get into that competitive battle with people and still execute your precise skills. So that would be my definition of a good bowler, and it's certainly what we're aspiring to be able to deliver here at Millfield. We've got our own criteria of what good is. If that person wants to be a professional cricketer, then these are the parameters that you need to be able to hit in order to give yourself the best chance of going into professional cricket. Equally, take 2 or 3% off of it and you're somewhere near where you're going to be a good Premier League bowler. So that would be the way that I would go about it. But I'm fairly clear in what I'm looking for at the level that I coach nowadays.
And so having a clear idea of what good is a great start to that. But to go back to the question, Labours, how long does it take?
But surely the two are linked.
Oh, yeah, sure, but I'm just trying to move it on, you know. I'm just trying to think, how do we answer that question to Samarth? Now, we've got our plan.
Well, obviously, what Gareth has done quite rightly is define the end point of what a good bowler is. I can now take on the other point of what you can't measure a journey to an end point if you don't know your starting point. So the next question is, where are you at the moment? So to turn me into a good bowler is very different from turning someone else into a good bowler. So even if we've defined what a good bowler is, being able to know the starting point would be the next question. I guess my kind of initial, one of my follow-up considerations for the question would be, why does it matter? Why does it matter how long it's going to take? You think about the time you have available. Think about the best way to structure it and get on with your training, okay? And it'll take the time it takes, okay? It's not the kind of thing that you should be thinking, well, if it's going to take a year, I might do it, but if it's going to take 2 years, I'm not going to do it. That's not really the right way of investing into improving at something for me. So really it should be, look, make your program as good as you can be. Commit as much time and as much energy as you're willing to give up or you're able to give up for it. And focus on getting on with it. Get your head down and work hard on the various different aspects that are going to contribute to it. So you'll have a bit of technical work, I'm sure you'll have to do. You'll have a bit of physical work. You'll have a bit of planning and tactical ideas. You'll have lots of different things going on. But if you spend all your time thinking about the end goal and the end result and how long it's going to take there to get there, then you're probably going to be wasting time that you could be focusing on yourself and getting better.
Well, that's a great answer, that. That's very zen, very in the moment, isn't it? I love that. It doesn't matter really then, does it? I mean, you know roughly where you're going, but you know, you can look at the scenery on the way and enjoy it much more than if you just put your head down and start running. And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. We are going to head off now, but before we go, we've got a little piece of admin to sort out, and that is to decide on the winner of the competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had a couple of short but sweet questions. One from Adam about stopping openers from blocking it, and one from Samarth about the time it takes to be a good bowler. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I like the blocking one. I thought that was awesome.
It was brilliant.
I was well happy with that as a question. In some ways, I wish I could have blocked better. In other ways, I feel your pain, or what we perceive as being your pain. So hopefully with that advice, you can open up some conversations, get a bit more understanding about where they're coming from and maybe where you guys are coming from, and see where you go from there.
It's funny, isn't it, how these things grow up in cricket, where you have, you know, there's some things you can say to something and it's a horrendous insult. And yet, you know, if anyone outside of the game heard that, you'd say, what are you talking about? Why is that bad? You know, chucker is another one. And blocker is another one. Like, you get accused of either of them. You know, it's a fate worse than death almost. So
I think it's, but going back to we've all played, haven't we, with guys that have been more defensive minded or are looking to set up an innings, you know, which is,
yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing that seen through two different lenses, I suppose. And the crucial thing is that everybody understands where that person is, you know. So we at Bentley Cricket Club, when I was growing up, we had my dad would bat, his aim would be to bat through the innings, get between 70 and 100 not out, and the rest of us could just tee off at the other end. And that worked absolutely brilliant because it was part of an overall plan rather than him just going out there and saying to himself without telling anybody, I'm just going to block the proverbial out of it so I can get 70 not out. Whereas we're all going, that's fantastic, because if you're 70 not out, we're going to score a bit quicker. You bat for us and we'll end up with 240 in 40 overs, which back in the day was an unbelievable score. And that's the way that we went about it. But it was a completely intrinsic plan to the group of players that we had, and everybody believed in it. And that's the crucial thing I think you guys are lacking here, is a clarity of why it's happening and how that fits into the overall plan of the team.
Well, Adam, maybe one thing you can do to help out the openers is to get them one of the batting courses, which shows you how to smash the ball. So yeah, you can just hand that keys of that over to them and say, there you go, lads, have a look at that and come back to me.
And if you are listening, Dad, you weren't just a blocker, by the way.
You see, it's a terrible insult. You can't just...
you did have a pull shot, cut shot and a sweep shot as well. But that was pretty much it.
Fantastic. Okay, so Gareth, to get back on track, how can people get in touch with the show if they wanted to have their question answered and win that prize?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us through social media. The Pitch Vision social media pages are available. You can contact us through that, friend us through that. Or you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy, or Twitter @PitchVisionAcad. You can also listen to the show every week. You can subscribe by going to your favourite podcast app. It's free, and just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Exciting fun in there. And also the Pitch Vision app is another way to get it. So you've got no excuse to not listen every week. But that is all for this week. I hope you listen next week. Until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers all.
Thanks, guys.